Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, this is Donna Sebo, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. Well, today we're going to be taking you into a realm of experience that one woman has traveled who, she's got so much to share. After I introduce her, I'll tell you a little bit about her, and then we'll get into her real story. And the book is called Medicine Dance. Welcome, Marcia Scarborough. It's so delightful to have you as a guest.
Well, thank you, Donna. It's so delightful to be visiting with you.
Medicine Dance. Now, this is something that when people pick this book up, I think they're really going to be surprised at the journey that you're going to take them through. But before we do that, I want to talk about your journey that you have experienced as a professional that has evolved you into being in this wonderfully interesting life. You studied journalism at the University of Southern California, and you were named the guest feature editor of Mademoiselle magazine, which took you to New York and Peru. And then you graduated from the Directors Guild of America's Assistant Directors Training Program, which is a very, very significant thing to do. You spent 17 years of your life, and I love this, scheduling, planning, and running the sets of 4 feature films, primetime television series, movies of the week, and network sitcoms. You worked with Clint Eastwood, Leonard Nimoy, Blake Edwards, Carl Reiner. You produced, directed, by the way, you also wrote, the award-winning children's video, The Magic of Martial Arts, which was given a gold award from the National Association of Parenting Publications. You got the Award of Excellence from Film Advisory Board and the Kids First. You got endorsement from the Coalition for Quality Children's Media. I mean, this is wonderful. You've been a freelance journalist. You've had over 75 articles published in major publications. You have interviewed some of Hollywood's most prominent screen and television writers. But you also you've got all of these wonderful, wonderful things that you've done, but you've also taken a road spiritually where you were involved with Buddhism, and a special teacher for that. You were involved with a guru that taught dance movement. You got a brown belt in karate. And you got involved with Native American culture. Now, I know for a fact your life has not been boring. Just
This is true.
You have not had a boring life at all. But your journey, which has taken you to so many different venues. I mean, I can just imagine some of my listeners mentally salivating, saying, oh, wow, this is just incredible. It is. You have had an absolutely awesome life. Yet, you went through a 6-year period that transformed your thinking. I mean, with everything you've gone through, I mean, that's not a surprise to me. But this was a very special journey that you felt you had to put a book together about. Tell us how it started.
It started in the late 90s. I had a period in my life where everything started to go wrong. My marriage was breaking up, my 18-year-old marriage. My parents were both dying. The movie business career was starting to really go downhill. And on top of that, I had a bad mammogram. And when you have a bad mammogram, they call you, and you know, it's this horrible call, and they say, you need to come in for another one. And you're like, oh, you know, okay, I'll come in. And they're like, oh, well, but we can't schedule you for 2 weeks. And so then you go in after 2 weeks of worrying about it, and they do another one, and they go, well, you know, it's really not definitive, and we really need a radiologist to look at it. And you're like, okay. And then they say, well, but we can't schedule you for 2 weeks. So you're waiting another 2 weeks. Then you see this specialist, and he goes, you know, what I really need is an ultrasound. But of course, they can't schedule you for 2 weeks. So in that time period, I was just going insane. I felt so powerless. Was there cancer raging through my body? Was there anything I could do about it? And all I could do was wait. And in that interim, someone called me and said, there's a Native American medicine man in town. I was living in Los Angeles. And he's doing private healings. And I was just like, sign me up. I'll try anything. It's something I can do. So I went to a private healing and met a beautiful painted arrow, Joseph Real. He did some work on me that I now know to be energy work. At that time, I didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. He did what is called a shamanic extraction. At that time, I didn't know what it was. But it's a healing where they remove an imaginary object that's causing the problem. And when he did that, I saw this image in my mind that it was like a little arrowhead that was in my breast, and I had this thought that my mother put it there. And he said, you know, you and your mother are the same, so that doesn't really matter. But as part of your healing, would you like to contact your mother, who was then dead, in the spirit world and ask her to help you in this life? And I thought, that sounded like a good idea. So although I was somewhat skeptical, I went ahead with the ceremony that he gave me. And then I went in for the ultrasound, and they could find nothing at all. So then I was really, really interested. I felt there was something there that I didn't understand, but that was definitely worth pursuing. And almost immediately after that, a close woman friend of mine, and we were both divorced, we had no children, we weren't close to our sisters, our parents were dead, and she had taken care of her mother while she died of breast cancer. I had taken care of my mother while she died of lymphoma. And my friend said to me, what would happen if one of us got serious cancer? Who would take care of us? And I said, well, let's say we'll take care of each other. And within a month of that, she was diagnosed with really serious cancer. I went to be with her. She happened to, at that time, live about 15 minutes from where Beautiful Painted Arrow lived. So I was in the very privileged position of being able to consult with him as I was working with her on her healing.
Mm-hmm.
So that started me just incrementally being drawn deeper and deeper into this shamanic healing in the Native American way. And Beautiful Painted Arrow, who is half Picaris Pueblo and half Southern Ute, is clear that he does not call himself traditional, because he has adapted the ceremonies and rituals and shamanic techniques for people of every different culture and for our contemporary times. So it's not a strictly traditional Native American teaching. He based it on the techniques he learned from his elders because they work, but he had a vision that he was to share it, particularly with white people, because they were the ones causing the damage to the earth, and they were the ones that really needed healing for the whole earth to be saved.
You went through, in your book, many of your different experiences, and for those of you listening, we're talking with Marcia Scarborough, Medicine Dance, and she's been talking to us about cancer and other things. You address a number of different issues, because when this experience with you happened, with Beautiful Painted Arrow, you couldn't help but have a paradigm shift. And knowing your background, you couldn't help but be curious as to what, you know, what's going on here, what's working. But it took you on a journey that I think was a very powerful journey. And the message of your book is so well stated, I think, and you've got multiple levels in that message. But there's one sentence that I pulled out that I thought was very significant. You said, anyone who writes about another culture can only be as accurate as the information shared by informants who tell only what they want us to know. And I thought, this is an interesting statement, because the truth is, whenever we do write, we are coming from our own perspective. And when you come from the heart, as you do in your book, you give a view of your experience and various people that interacted in this play, if you will, that were quite significant. They were very independently unique in their own ways, and they brought you a lot in the way of personal growth and development, didn't they?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that it's important for all of us to know that our own experience is the most valid teacher. And even reading a book like my book doesn't fully give you the teaching, but it gives you a taste of what it was like. But the people in our lives that may be who we view as the cause of our problems
mm-hmm.
are actually very powerful teachers for us
mm-hmm.
in showing us where we need to work and how we need to work. So that was one thing I learned, that we all agree to everything before we come here. So people may not behave in the way that we think they should to make us happy, but if we are smart healers of ourselves, we will learn from what emotions they raise in us about how we can heal ourselves.
Now, at the very beginning of your journey, I shouldn't say right at the beginning, but you had gone through so much relative to your parents and to their dying, and all of the issues that you mentioned you were going on with. You were married, your husband's name was Jack, and you had some real strange situations occur with your partner at that time. Tell us a little bit about that.
My husband was an artist, and he was a sensitive person, but not completely emotionally stable, and he started to slip into a sort of psychosis. And this was at the same time my parents were dying, so all these things were going on in my life that were very disturbing that I didn't really understand. And I was trying various techniques because I was often in distress myself, including Buddhism and Buddhist meditation, and some of that really triggered some psychotic reactions in him. So part of my moving on with my own healing was dissolving the marriage and allowing him to go ahead and work on his own healing. So it was a painful and complicated situation.
Yes, it was. And you go into more detail about that in your book. But after your mom died, and after you had gone through this profound healing experience, you called someone, and you were telling them about the good news, and you said also, something unusual has happened because there's a hummingbird around me. And I just love this story about the hummingbird. Share that.
Well, part of this ceremony, the beautiful painted arrow gave me about getting in touch with my mother after she had died, it involved making her favorite food and taking it outside and dropping it in the garden and saying in Tiwa, "Mother, I feed you," and then asking her to come and give me a sign that she was with me and was willing to help me. And so I did that, feeling somewhat ridiculous, and was, he said it might be a dream, it might be, so I was kind of waiting to have some really profound dream, and I didn't, and I was kind of nervous that I didn't really know how to do this and I wasn't going to get the sign. And in the mornings I would go out on my back patio and do Tai Chi. And so I was out there like a couple days after I had done the ceremony with the food, which interestingly, you dropped the food on the ground. I had dropped it on the ground, and then 2 days later I went out and noticed that it had not been decomposed. It hadn't decomposed at all. And there were no bugs on it or anything, and I thought that was very strange, and I called him, and he said that was a sign, and that was really powerful that I had in the ceremony, gotten the food caught between two worlds, between ordinary and non-ordinary reality, and that now that I had noticed that, it would start to decompose, and it did. But so that had happened. I was out doing Tai Chi on my patio, and this hummingbird started coming around, and I had noticed it before. It came around, but on this day, it was like really flying close to me and close to my face, and I noticed that it had the ruby throat. And my mother's name was Ruby. So I said, are you Ruby? Are you my sign? And the bird like flew right in my face and flew away. So then I was all confused, and I called Beautiful Painted Arrow, and he said, yes, that's definitely the sign, and it's even more powerful when it happens in physical reality than when it happens in the dream time.
Oh, very much so.
So that's my sort of my totem now. Mm-hmm. You know, when I see hummingbirds, I know that my mother is with me, helping me.
It's interesting the various experiences we'll go through. And like you say, this is very personal. And that is what your book, Medicine Dance, is all about. It's about this time in your life and all of the different points of experience that you had to go through to reach your own understanding, and how you had Joseph there to help you, to give you feedback, to make you aware. And it's not easy, because so often we think we're going to get an absolute roadmap with what we're going to do, and it doesn't turn out that way. But you had someone else that was so significant in your life, and she was one of your greatest teachers, and that was Phoebe.
And that was my friend. We had been very close in college, and she was the one who was diagnosed with the very serious cancer shortly after my whole hummingbird healing experience. And so I went to, she was living in Albuquerque, I went in there to be with her and walked her through a very difficult time. And in my, and she taught me a lot about relationships. So even though my marriage had ended, I continued to learn about relationships and how I needed to grow to have better relationships through my relationship with her.
Yes, and she was quite a teacher. Now, you went through a sweat lodge experience, and that was the first time that you did that. You thought you were going to die when you went through that. Now, all of us have heard about sweat lodges and how it gets very warm and so on and so forth. But it was more than that, because it was dark inside, and it was very oppressive. I mean, if somebody had claustrophobia, they probably wouldn't be comfortable doing it. Tell us what your first experience was like in that sweat lodge.
Well, the sweat lodge is an experience that works on many levels. It's a metaphor for the womb of Mother Earth, or for the womb, and it's the womb of Mother Earth. And then the hot rocks going in represent the male energy entering the womb and heating it up. So you actually have the opportunity, if you have the understanding of the metaphor and the intention, to go in and really change yourself, which sounded like a good idea to me. And so what you don't know is when you go in and they close it, it's absolutely dark. And it's like a little igloo, and you're sitting cross-legged with a bunch of other people, and you're crammed in there. It's very claustrophobic. It's very, very dark. And then it starts to get really, really hot, and you feel like you can't breathe. And it is scary. And I know now that, and through that experience of going through it that first time, where you really think you're going to die, and you think you can't breathe, and then you're supposed to be praying on top of that, that what it does is it makes you confront your fear. There's really kind of no escaping your fear. And I think we spend so much of our lives trying to avoid being afraid, or pretend we're not afraid, or running away from being afraid, that the huge lesson of the sweat lodge in forcing you to sit there in the dark, in the heat, crowded, feeling like you can't breathe, is in a way you make friends with your fear. Not that your fear goes away, but that you get comfortable with just sitting there and being with your fear.
You recognize in this journey of yours that Phoebe and your mother had a common attitude, and they had a lot of resentment about the men that had been in their life, and it carried over on so many levels. What impact did that have on you with your thinking when you became aware of that?
Well, you know, these important people in our lives are always mirrors. And so I, you know, looked into them and asked the question about myself. What resentment did I have toward men? How was I expecting men to heal me, take care of me, make me happy. And there are no easy answers to that kind of thing. And all you can basically do is take a look at your own relationships and how you handle them. But I did have the awareness from observing them that it was something I needed to work on and that I needed to allow men to be who they were without having to make me happy be their primary mission in life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think that was helpful.
You were with Phoebe through so much of her medical treatments, so much of the process, because the promise had been made that you would be there if she needed you. And when she went in the hospital, you talk about her chemotherapy, and you say it's really scary because everything that's given in the procedure that she went through was highly toxic. And you say the idea behind the chemo is to pump enough poison into the body to kill the fast-growing cancer cells. The trick is to stop before too much damage is done to everything else. The problem is that the poison that kills cancer cells also kills every other kind of fast-growing cell, like hair, fingernails, and mucous membranes. Dead mucous membranes in your digestive tract cause nausea. Dead hair falls out, fingernails turn black. Sometimes teeth crumble and fall out. You saw so much, and you describe it so well. You talk about driving her home, and all of this was so very, very emotional for you, and she had all of this anger. How were you able to deal with this?
I'm not sure I dealt with it all that well at the time, but the tools that helped me get through it, one was the sweat lodge, because the sweat lodge is also a safe place for you to go and express emotion. So when you're caretaker for a person who's seriously ill or dying, when you're with them, you have to hold it together and be the strong one who's taking care of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And you need some kind of arena where you can go and express your own emotion around that, because you are feeling deep sadness and fear and loss and all these doubts about whether you are, you know, a helplessness around trying to support them. And so the sweat lodge was an important arena for me to work on taking care of myself while I was taking care of her. And then the other ritual that Beautiful Painted Arrow guides me into eventually, that it was extremely helpful, not only in that situation, but in all the subsequent situations in my life, were these marathon dance fasts. The sort of based on the sun dance that some of us have heard about, where you go for 3 to 4 days fasting food and water out in the wilderness with a group of people dancing. So it is an enforced meditation and a very deep meditation for the dancer. And I think that helped me know how to find inner peace when I needed it.
Now, with the drum dance, this is part of the Native American culture that goes back centuries. And he adapted it a little bit to today's environment, did he not?
Yes, he did.
What were the adaptations that he had made to it? Because it really is, and you go into a great deal of detail regarding the drum dance and how you had to reach a certain point of becoming totally at one with something. Describe that to us.
Well, what you had mentioned earlier, the quote about how we depend on informants and to know what they're willing to tell us, part of the problem in me describing how it was adapted is I don't know what I don't know. There are things that I'm sure were not revealed to me as someone who is not part of the Native culture, so I wouldn't know exactly what they were. And he comes from the Southern Ute tradition, which is a little different than the Lakota is the one that we know more about. So, you know, some of the things that I might think are adaptations might just be a difference between Lakota and Southern Ute.
Mm-hmm.
But so how it works is you're in a group of people, and I think that that is probably an important part of it always, that there's a sense of community there. You go together. You start with a sweat lodge. He sets up in the drum dance a rope that has feathers hanging from it, and you're dancing forward and backward, focused on that feather. You dance over a period of 3 days, and you usually dance a couple hours and then rest a little bit. You sleep at night. The drumming goes on all the time. So there's no conversation. You're in silence, and I think that's a very important part of it also,
mm-hmm.
because that then puts you in a completely different part of your brain than the verbal part. So as you're out there, and the huge issue immediately becomes the issue of thirst. It's like, you know, you're hungry for maybe like the first 12 hours, but then you're mm-hmm. so thirsty you don't even think about that, because that really puts you up against the wall. And so once you have accomplished that, and it's difficult. There's nothing about this that's easy. This is a marathon. This is an endurance thing. And you are very much forced to look at your own issues, because in days of doing nothing but dancing to a monotonous drum beat that puts you into a trance state, there's no distractions. There's nothing to escape from but for you to look at your deepest, deepest fears. And again, you are, you know, confronted with your fear, but at the same time, once you accomplish it, and it was touch and go for me. It was like that first time I didn't know that I could accomplish it, and I came pretty close to abandoning the thing a couple of times. But I did make it through to the end of the ceremony. And once you have done that, you've accomplished something really difficult that you know was really difficult. And that makes you feel good about yourself. And I think there's some profound therapy for contemporary people in just this idea of challenging yourself to do something really difficult that you might not even want to do that much. And then when you accomplish it, your self-esteem is raised immensely. And I think that does a lot to help your psychology. One of the things I think is so profound about Native American shamanism and other indigenous shamanisms is they recognize that physical healing doesn't take place on its own, that it is inextricably entwined with your mental and your emotional and your spiritual healing. So these ancient techniques they use address everything at once. And I think that's the really genius and magic of it.
Well, I think your book is fascinating. There is so much more detail that we're not able to even touch that you have in here. More of a story about Phoebe, yourself, the actual dance, everything that you went through. I think it's just beautifully presented. Now, Marcia, I know we're almost out of time here. There is a website people can go to, marciascarborough.com, and it's MarciascarBrough, MarciascarBrough.com. You'll find all kinds of information there that I know will be very helpful. Marcia, your book, Medicine Dance, I think speaks to one on so many levels. If anybody is really fascinated with Native American history, I think that this is something that is a very good read. But more than that, I applaud you for being so honest about your own experience of personal growth and sharing segments of your personal life that maybe many of us wouldn't even be interested in bringing to the forefront of others. And you've done it so well. It's really well done. Marcia Scarborough, thank you for being my guest today.
Donna, thank you. And I must say, you're a very insightful reader. You got a lot of things on a lot of different levels. And it's fun to talk to somebody like that.
Thank you, Marcia. It's a delight to have you as a guest. Her book, Medicine Dance, One Woman's Healing Journey into the World of Native American Sweat Lodges, Drumming Meditations, and Dance Fasts. It's a picture into a world that not many of us have an opportunity to experience, and Marcia did. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Hello, this is Dr. Richard Petty, the author of Healing, Meaning, and Purpose, and creator of the RichardGPettyND.com website. I am thrilled and delighted to tell you that starting February 7th, 2008, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining my friend Donna Sebo on her show on bbsradio.com. We're going to do this every month, and I can guarantee you that we're going to be sharing new information and new concepts that will astonish and inspire you.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are now open. That's right. You can give me a buzz, and I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here are the toll-free numbers. You can call in to 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Now, all I need from you is your first name or initial. If you are a first-time listener, my goodness, this is so much fun. It's really easy, and you just call in, give me your first name or initial. I always like to know where you're calling from, and then after that, let me do what I do best. And then when I'm finished giving you my insights, you are welcome to ask me a question about anyone, anything, any situation that you desire. I always tell people I'm an information resource, and I am delighted to be able to do it with you freely on the air. Now, yesterday, I wasn't able to finish this story about the iron cut from the Oklahoma coal mine. So what I'm going to do, because some of you listening may not have been able to listen to the show yesterday, so I'm going to tell the story from beginning all the way through. This I'm wanting to share with you because so frequently, and this happens all the time, every generation has to deal with it, we have people that say, this is the absolute. We know all. We just have got everything so perfectly established. Whether it's archaeology, medicine, spirituality, I don't care. There will always be those individuals that think they've got it all in a little nutshell. Well, when it comes to archaeology, they are discovering today that a lot of the time factors that they have thought were accurate were not, or are not. And so there are these shifts that go on. But before they can happen, there usually has to be a series of experiences or facts that are brought to the forefront. Sometimes these facts, well, they're kept records. Some records are kept somewhere, but they'll disappear into the ethers, where there are two men that have done an incredible amount of research. They put together a book called The Hidden History of the Human Race. Michael A. Cremo and Richard L. Thompson are the two men that I mentioned on air yesterday, and I'll repeat their names again today, that really have a passion for history, for investigation, and for exploring the unusual. Well, on January 10th, 1949, Robert Nordling sent a photograph of an iron cup to a Frank L. Marsh of Andrews University in Barron Springs, Michigan. Now, Nordling wrote this. He said, "I visited a friend's museum in southern Missouri. Among his curios, he had the iron cup pictured on the enclosed snapshot." Now, apparently, this private museum, this cup, had been displayed along with a following affidavit. This affidavit had been made by Frank J. Kenwood in Sulphur Springs, Arkansas, on November 27, 1948. And this is how this affidavit read. "While I was working in a municipal electric plant in Thomas, Oklahoma in 1912, I came across a solid chunk of coal which was much too large to use, so I broke it with a sledgehammer. This iron pot fell from the center, leaving the impression or mold of the pot in the piece of coal. Jim Stahl, an employee of the company, witnessed my breaking this large piece of coal and saw the pot fall out. I traced the source of the coal and found that it came from Wilburton, Oklahoma mines. According to Robert O'Fay of the Oklahoma Geological Survey, the Wilburton mine is about 312 million years old. That's right, 312 million years old. In 1966, Marsh sent a photo with a cup and the correspondence relating it to Wilbert H. Rusch, a professor of biology at Concordia College in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Marsh stated the following. Enclosed is the letter and snap sent me by Robert Nordling some 17 years ago. When I got interested enough in this pot, the size of which can be gotten at somewhat by comparing it with the seat of the straight chair it is resting on, a year or two later, I learned that this friend of Nordling had died, and his little museum was scattered. Nordling knew nothing of the whereabouts of the iron cup. It would challenge the most alert sleuth to see if he could run it down. If this cup is what it is sworn to be, it is truly a most significant artifact." Well, so many times things disappear. Evidence like this iron cup, well, it's got lost somewhere. I'm sure it's in somebody's cupboard. And it'll go from hand to hand among people that are not really aware of its value. Stories like this come down. And so often we are told, oh, that's all fabrication. Well, as archaeology is opening up because of technology to entirely new venues of opportunity, they are finding that this may not be as far-fetched as you think. Now, I'm sure there are those that might be listening to the show say, "Donna, you're out of your mind." But, you know, they don't really even have a way of aging this earth or giving the age of this earth. It has been around for so many millennia. And there's a lot that's gone on before us. It seems to me that there, and this is the Donna opinion, that humanity reaches a point where it gets too, well, just into a situation where it undermines itself, and also natural catastrophes. And then things just disappear. And then one day some archaeological expedition or some farmer out in the field with a bulldozer or a hoe or whatever digs up something and say, "Guess what I found? I've never seen anything like this before." How many things have been discovered in obscure places that we didn't have a clue that anything was even there before? We build on that which has gone before us, and that is figuratively as well as literally. It is something that I find extremely interesting. And there's more and more information, for example, about the Minoan culture, so many things that we thought we had all the answers on. And I think as time goes by, we're going to find out there's still even more we don't know about. And one of the things that I'm waiting for someone to finally recognize is that people were traveling all over this globe for centuries before the Europeans ever woke up to the reality of it being impossible and that we weren't going to fall off the edge of the world. But that's just, again, a Donna opinion. But I just thought I'd share that with you because there was evidence that was given, that was documented, and then the item itself, because someone died, sort of disappears. We just never know. And that's why I have a deep appreciation for the collectors in life. I was watching an antique show. This is so many years ago. And it was a show that was being done in New York on a fairly regular basis. And I'd get on my treadmill for my daily exercise walk. And I would just love looking at all of these wonderful things that people had collected. And one of the appraisers made a statement that has always stuck in my mind. And I thought it was a very good one. He said, collectors are invaluable. People seem to think that museums are really the ultimate place for things to be, but really what has preserved so much of history are those individuals that cherish and value things and will pass them down in the family. And I think that's one of the gifts that the Antique Roadshow gives us. There are all these stories about people that have memorabilia from family members that maybe were born 100 years or more, and things have been passed down, and there's a story that goes with them. But it is just to show you that when we have those caretakers, people that really take care of things, it allows us to keep a history that otherwise would not be there. And every time we have someone in our family that has lived a great span of life and have seen massive changes in their lifetime and maybe experienced different cultural perspectives that we would never otherwise be aware of, it's so nice when we can listen to their stories, maybe write them down or have them talk into a tape recorder or some kind of an apparatus so we can record what they knew and they experienced. Because we're not going to be going backwards to experience what they did. We're going to be going forward. So maybe that's just something you should keep in mind. If you have somebody special that you love that has gone through a very, very special journey, try to talk to them. Try to find out about them. Bring the younger members of the family around them and let them share their stories because it really does make a difference. Goodness, the world I knew, my grandkids and great-grandkids are never going to know. And it doesn't mean it's good or bad. It just means that's what it is. But it's a wonderful thing to be able to preserve. It's just like my guest today, Marcia, telling her story. That story is there. That story is there in written form that can be read by anybody that might be interested. And that's a good thing, I think. This is Donna Siebel. We're going to be going on a break in just a little bit. If you wanted to give me a buzz, call me at 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756 because I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. Now, here are my guests that are going to be coming up. We're going to be talking about the 16 myths of diabetic diet. This is tomorrow. Karen Chalmers is going to be my guest. Goodness, for anyone that has to deal with that, I'm sure it is so frustrating. You can't have this, you're supposed to have that. And then, there's just all kinds of to-dos and not-to-dos. Well, we're going to find out about myths that have been perpetuated, and let's see if we can get rid of some of those. Also, we're going to be talking with Kathleen Fillmore on Thursday, the six-figure speaker. This is a gal that runs a speakers bureau in Canada. And if you want to know about how to be able to make those large numbers by being out in front of people, you can do it, you know. She has got some inside information that I think is terrific. And then on Friday, we're going to be talking about cutting the cords of attachment. Do you find sometimes that you are pulled by an emotion connected to a person or an experience, a place, and you'd love to break it because it sort of just keeps you in a loop of emotional stress, mental stress that you don't want to continue to be in? Well, Rose Rosetrack is going to tell us exactly what we can do. Great gal, great information, and I know you'll enjoy it. Well, we're going to take a break for a moment. Give me a buzz if you want to chat. 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. If we have time when we come back, I've got a chocolate recipe. Good stuff. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. I will be glad to give you an intuitive reading if you so desire, and it's a lot of fun, it's interesting, and informative. So again, 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756. Well, I'm sharing this information on how you can, feel better about your life just slowing down. I want you to get a pad of paper and a pen because I've got a recipe for chocolate and coconut cookies. Mm-hmm. Good, good, good. But meanwhile, while you're getting that pad of paper and pen, slowing down. So many of us are so busy being busy. It seems like we're going from the moment we open our eyes in the morning, the heads are buzzing with, I got to do this, I got to do that, I got to do the other. And then our feet hit the floor, and we're on the run from that moment until we're ready to go to bed at night. We look in the mirror, and we're just dragging and going, oh, I'm so tired. And then we go to bed, and we're up and at it again. Well, do you know that they have found in research that meditation is the practice of paying attention and increasing awareness, and it's often described as mindfulness? Well, you'll hear that stated on this show many times. And the reason you should look at doing it, and you don't have to spend an hour or 2 hours a day doing this, you can meditate just about any time, any place, anywhere, and it can be for as small a period of time as a minute. It's just something that when you do, you just come into the moment and you're very present with where you are. You know, when you meditate, your brain gets unscrambled and you get clarity. They've measured this when they've had people do meditations. They've found with the EEGs, the MRIs, and PET scans, there's a noticeable difference in the calmness of the individual. Why? Well, your mind sort of quiets down. You're allowed to, or I should say, you allow yourself to feel a real deep sense of peace, and it's just a great way to relax. When you are in that mindset, when you stop the meditation, you're refreshed. It really invigorates you. Now, these are some techniques or some tips that are given regarding meditation. Remember I said it can only, if you could spend a minute doing this? Well, they say if you bring mindfulness to whatever you do, for example, when you're eating, when you focus on your food, you'll find that it tastes better, and you're satisfied with less. When you're ironing something, give it your full attention. If you can, have some quiet around you. Don't have any noise. If you are aware of your senses, what smells are you smelling?
what kind of sensations does your skin feel right now in the moment? Is a piece of fabric brushing up against your skin? Is something moving? Is there a fly crawling on your arm? Now, what is it? What's going on? Being attentive to what is going on and what is happening with you. Using your senses is a form of meditation. It brings you into a moment. It brings you into where you are, and it allows you to relax. It allows you to pull yourself together and gain some clarity that maybe you don't feel you have in a moment. But it can be yours, no matter where you are, anytime, any place. It's really great. It's very simple. So I wanted to share that with you today. Okay, have you got those pads of paper or a piece of paper and a pen? If you are a person that loves chocolate, as I do, you're going to enjoy this. And these are such pretty cookies when they're finished, and they're not that difficult to make at all. Now, this is what you're going to need. You're going to need a third of a cup of butter, a third of a cup of butter. And I know some of you out there like to use margarine. I sort of have a bias against margarine. That's mean, though. I prefer butter. I like to use the real thing. You need a third of a cup of butter, and it needs to be at room temperature, soft. You need a teaspoon of vanilla extract, six tablespoons of confectionery sugar, and you want to sift that. Six tablespoons of confectionery sugar sifted, a cup of all-purpose flour, two tablespoons of unsweetened cocoa, and two-thirds cup of shredded coconut, two tablespoons of butter. That needs to be off in a little plate on the side. Two tablespoons of butter. Again, room temperature. You need 3.5 ounces of white marshmallows. 3.5 ounces of white marshmallows. 1/4 cup of shredded coconut. Again, off to the side. Another 1/4 cup of shredded coconut. And then you're going to need a little dark chocolate. So if you have any chocolate chips in the freezer, you're just going to need some of those. And you want to be sure that those will be melted. Now, there's only 5 steps to this. And this is how easy it is. You're going to lightly grease a cookie sheet. You're going to beat together the 1/3 cup of butter, the vanilla extract, and the confectionery sugar in a mixing bowl until it's nice and light and fluffy. Then, in another small bowl, you're going to sift together the flour and the unsweetened cocoa. Then you're going to take that mixture and put it right in with the butter mixture. And you want to beat that, and then you want to add your 2/3 cup of shredded coconut. Now that's your cookie dough. So you're going to take heaping teaspoons, roll them into a ball between your palms, and place them on the prepared cookie sheet. Now I'll tell you, just a Donna tip here, I like using parchment paper. Myself. I really do. It makes cleanup a lot easier. So if you do, just put the parchment paper down, and you may want to just, you don't need to spray it if you use parchment paper. You want to flatten the balls slightly with a spatula or a knife and bake them in a preheated oven at 350 degrees for 12 to 15 minutes. And you'll need to watch them until the cookies are just firm. You don't want them to get crispy. So you want to be aware. You want to watch them. Now, you leave the cookies out once they're taken out of the oven. You want to cool them on a cookie sheet for a few minutes and then transfer them to a wire rack. And you want them to cool completely. Now, if you wanted to, at this point, if that's all you wanted to do and you just wanted to bake cookies ahead and you wanted to freeze them, the cookies are totally cool, then you want to be, if you want to put them in the freezer, undecorated, they'll keep for up to 2 months. So you could freeze the cookies after this. But if you want to serve them and you want to decorate them, then you want to take the 2 tablespoons of butter and the marshmallows in a small saucepan, and you want to heat it very, very gently and slowly, stirring it continuously until the butter and the marshmallows have melted and are well blended. Then you take that frosting mixture, that's all there is to the frosting, and you just spread a little over each of the cookies. And then in the little amount of coconut, you know, the quarter cup of coconut. You just take your cookies that you frosted and dip them in that coconut so there's a few of those little coconut sprinkles right on the top. And if you like, you can take that small amount of chocolate that you want to melt. You know, if you had any of the Hershey squares or whatever, just melt them, and then you can drizzle them with the chocolate if you want, or you don't have to put that on at all. It's all up to you as to what you would like to do. But this is such a easy recipe, and they will store very well for up to a week in an airtight container. You know, when you fix items that don't have preservatives in them, they may not keep all that long, but I guess I'll tell you what, these won't last 5 minutes after you put them out on a plate. They're going to be gone. Perfect for company. Well, this is Donna Sebo. We are out of time. So glad you were able to be with me today. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Enjoy those sweet things in life because they are just that. They are sweet and they're meant to be savored. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be back with you tomorrow, same time, same place. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.